This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Six o'clock on The Fan, the morning show with Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti in for the next couple of days. I felt really good about the Yankees being only two games out when we started the show this morning. Didn't happen. Yankees took care of their end of the bargain, but the Red Sox kept winning. Nobody cares about the Mets. Odell Beckham Jr. spoke, and Jerry's going to play some of that sound, and I have a feeling we're going to be very, very disgusted with that. Rick Pitino is out. Plenty of stuff to get to this morning. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yes, and Severino was lights out last night. Exactly. I don't think Joe Girardi could have asked for anything better from his ace, because what you want to do, last regular season game for him, go into the postseason feeling really good about yourself, and he'll most likely see the Twins next week, and he's all set up. Everything's perfect. It couldn't have worked out any more perfect for the Yankees and Joe Girardi, the way he's got this whole thing set up. What I do like about the Yankees, though, they have that look, that swagger that tells me that, you know, they're not just showing up now. They are really legitimately playing hard, trying to win. They want to finish this season on a high note. Doesn't really matter what Boston's doing. I mean, they're just going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and they'll have to play one more game, you know, and that may be a game that ends up costing them in the long run, because they'll lose Severino for a start in the division series. But you know what? He was really good last night. His slider was moving. He threw one hanging slider, and David Cone was talking about it and everything else. And it's great listening to great old pitchers, you know, whether it be Ronnie Darling or David Cone, that when they really are allowed to talk and explain what the hell's going on and why this happens or why that happens. I mean, you learn a lot. I mean, I was a pitcher, but, you know, these guys, this is how they made their bread and butter. And I can always learn something new when I'm listening to them discuss what's going on. So if you're a Yankee fan, you wake up this morning, everything is all right. Your lineup is full. Your bullpen is full. Your starters, now, can't, you know, Sonny Gray's got to go out and, you know, finish his season off on a very high note, and take all this momentum and take it right into the playoffs, and you never know what can happen.
You hate the fact that they have to play the one game, but outside of that, they have been flexing their muscles now for days and weeks. Severino, 100 miles an hour on the gun, fired up. The offense is just astronomically good at this point. Home runs every single night. Aaron Judge last night doesn't even need to hit home run. Double, couple runs that are in. I mean, they are peaking at this point. They have that look of a postseason team that's going to have a long run. And I'm not scared of the Twins. I understand the whole situation with one game. It's one game. I'm not scared of the Minnesota Twins whatsoever. You don't like going right to Cleveland right after that, which is the best team in baseball. But there's really no reason to believe, formatically, the way that baseball is, how it's a crapshoot, and the way that the Yankees are playing that they can't go to the World Series. As great as Cleveland has been, there's no reason to believe that the Yankees aren't a World Series team built to win right now.
And I would just say that the Cleveland Indians are proof positive of that, because they had everything in their lap last year in one game, and they had it in their building, and they couldn't pull it off in Game 7 of the World Series. You know, I'll tell you what, the way this baseball season is finishing, I mean, there's so many intriguing stories and so many really good teams. And even the Cubs, I did a CBS Sports Minute on the Cubs this morning, because they won last night, and Joe Maddon is pouring the champagne on himself, a la Bill Murray, right? You would think that would be a hell of a lot of fun playing for that guy.
Yeah.
Especially when you're winning.
Right.
When you're winning, that guy is, like, you know, front and center. He's a little bit off center, and he's great. But think about the storylines, the Red Sox storylines. They just keep winning right along with the Yankees. Of course, you got the Yankees. You talk about them. Then you got the Cubs. Then you got the Dodgers. Then you got the Nationals. A lot of these teams at the beginning of the season were all expected to be where they are right now, right? Yeah. Every single team, maybe with the exception of the Diamondbacks and the Rockies.
Well, but not the Yankees.
I mean, but not the, the, and not the Yankees. Right. Those are basically it. Everybody else are teams that we all expected to be here. along with the Mets. Right. But unfortunately, you know, it's instead of the Mets, it's the Yankees. And, you know, from a baseball standpoint, from an interest standpoint, from name recognition standpoint, maybe with the exception of the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, everybody knows every other team because all these teams have been really good for the last few years. And there are a lot of great young players in baseball.
Yeah.
And when you think about the great young players in baseball and the way that the – and with all the concussion nonsense in football, I always call it nonsense. But with all the concussion stuff and everything, you would think that this is going to be a boom for baseball. But now is the time for kids in America to start playing baseball more often, to be energized by what Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez are doing here in this city. Think about just the popularity of the game right now with the teams that are getting ready to go into the playoffs.
I still think the biggest story is the Cleveland Indians, even with those bigger markets, because you got to know them last year, the ratings of the World Series, the fact that they blew that 3-1 lead. They went on this historic winning streak that captured the country's attention. So I still think that even with the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Yankees in the postseason, that the Cleveland Indians might be the most interesting team going into the postseason. But when big market teams are good, that should grow baseball. However, it's still really, really regional, and there's still a lot of kids that aren't really paying attention to the game because of short attention spans.
If you are not paying attention to the game with the group of players that the Cubs have, the name recognition of the players, the Indians and the Yankees now, I don't know when you're ever going to be paying attention to the game because you have big – you have – Dodgers, just Dodgers, Cubs, Red Sox, Yankees.
Sure.
Just those four teams.
For us, it's great. I'll tell you right now, though, on CBS Sports Radio and doing a national show,
yeah,
baseball doesn't register.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't. I get it. Everybody wants to talk football. Everybody wants to talk now NCAA basketball and the things that have been going on there for years and years and years. I've been railing against the AAU basketball system since the day that I got on this radio station. And I remember even talking with Imus and those guys around March Madness and all that stuff. And it's always the same teams, you know. I can start just naming off names. And if the FBI wants to go deep and completely ruin college basketball, they can.
Probably all of college football, too. Let's not forget about that.
I would just say this. If a guy comes from a major metropolitan area, I don't know, let's say – maybe around the University of Maryland.
Okay.
Because I know for a fact the University of Maryland never dipped their toe into this water at all. As a matter of fact, the great Gary Williams, when he used to be the coach at Maryland, I used to say, man, how did this guy go to that school? How does this guy go to that school? And he goes, well, you know how they went to those schools. Mm. You know exactly how they went to those schools.
Right.
Because those schools paid for him. And if a guy from an area of Maryland, around Maryland, ends up going to, I don't know, Kansas State or something.
Well,
in the middle
of nowhere.
Why'd
you pick those two places?
Right, exactly. Oh, and your AAU coach is coming with you?
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. Okay, right. So, and then when you become a first-round draft pick, remember, you got to go back to this guy, and these are the shoes that you're going to be wearing. Why? Because you received illicit benefits when you were in high school.
Yep.
And everybody knows it.
Right.
No matter what you say, everybody knows it. And this has been going on for years and years and years and years and years. And, you know, it's the dirtiest of all sports. Now, I know college football gets a bad rap because there are schools that do this as well. And there are schools that
have been. How about Ole Miss when they had that number one recruiting class out of nowhere and then all of a sudden they go down a couple years later? Okay, like nobody saw that one coming.
Well, I mean, this has been going on. And the reason it goes on is pretty simple. The college coaches, as you've seen with Rick Pitino, make a lot of money. They make, you know, $7 to $10 million a year. And it's all built around their basketball program. It's all built around their camps in the summers. And in order to stay relevant at these schools that are basketball crazy, especially in the state of Kentucky, and I'm sure that the University of Kentucky is going to be looked at, you know, you will understand when you go to these games. Because I've been to a Louisville game back in the day, been to Kentucky games and everything else. It is like a psycho passion like you've never, ever seen before.
Right.
And I'm just telling you that it's a breeding ground for crap like this, and it's not shocking to me at all. Everybody seems to be shocked. I don't know why.
No, you can't be shocked.
I talked to a couple people last night that are in college basketball, and they've been saying this has been going on since the 50s.
Yeah.
That, you know, why does Wilt Chamberlain leave Philadelphia to go to Kansas? Well, you know, John Wooden had all these great, you know, teams out there in UCLA, and many coaches have often said in regards to John Wooden, give me this, I guess it's a guy by the name of Gilbert or something, give me this guy as my assistant, and guess what? I'll have the same teams that he has for different reasons.
You know, I think that college basketball survives, though, because I think most fans assumed that this stuff was going
on.
They still love the game.
You know,
and the shocking
part,
too, you're so right about this, and there's one guy yesterday that I just could not take any more of. He was on every single show, and that was Dick Vitale, who was basically crying in these interviews. You could hear his voice quivering. Oh, the sleazy people, baby. I can't believe what's happening to the sport. You could argue that for the last 40 years, no one's been closer to college basketball than that guy. And then yesterday I got to hear him go, oh, I can't believe what's going on here. This is all my friend Rick Pitino. Oh, shut up. You know exactly what was going on. And the game will survive. And guess what? Players are still going to be getting paid. They're just going to be doing it in different ways.
I don't know about that. I would think that if you are in this situation, you get caught up in it, it's going to be horrendous. And it all comes – see, you have a confluence of things that are happening here. You have poor kids that can play basketball.
Yep.
And at the age of 12, 13, 14, these sleazy people in their world know where they are. They can find them. And when they find them, what do? They leverage their lack of money in the family.
It was life-changing for them.
It's life-changing for them, and they're basically telling that player and that player's family, we can take care of you right now, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. All that rhetoric where you are leveraging the fact that they're poor, and you're going to go in there and you're going to say, we could do all this. Now, they're AAU. There is no governing body covering this. There's nobody checking this.
Wild West.
And the NCAA is not involved because the colleges are not involved yet at this point.
Right.
The early point. The early point where you are going, you're like a parasite.
Yeah.
You see somebody that's poor and you see somebody that can play basketball. I'm going after that family and I'm going to make a difference in that kid's life. And I'm going to make a difference in that kid mom's life and the whole thing. And I'm going to pay this kid under the radar, and we're gonna keep them in our pen, if you will, and then we're gonna send them to the school that's gonna give us the most money. And guess what? We're gonna keep some of that money as well as your family, but we're gonna take care of you. And then all of a sudden, that AAU coach now knows the assistant coaches that are working for these head coaches that are under the radar, that allow the coach to have plausible deniability, and they're going to go out and they're going to do these things with a group of alum boosters, if you will, and they're going to hand suitcases of cash to people.
Yeah,
it's been going on. For
and I still
years.
Think I really do think that this is going to affect a lot of programs and a lot of people. It's still going to continue.
Should.
It's still going to continue. Rick Pitino, I understand if you're innocent, you want to fight and you want to make sure that you get things right. But Pitino, you got to give up. Stop with the statements. Stop with the lawyer coming out and saying these things. How many of these things can you go through? Whether it's the recruits with the prostitutes on campus, you had no idea. Or it's the fact that the shoe company is funneling players to you who happens to be an Adidas school and you know nothing about that. Well, I think it's almost as bad that you knew nothing about it, that you're in charge of this program and you were the head of this, than it is if you were complicit in it, because you need to be in charge of all of this stuff. He needs to go away. He's never going to get a job again in college basketball. He shouldn't. And if I see one more Rick Pitino statement of, I had no idea these people are running around and doing all this bad stuff, I'm just trying to win basketball games. I'm going to puke.
Well, he's going to win basketball games with great players. He's actually got a $44 million contract.
It's the highest paid guy in college basketball.
Right, and there's a reason for that, because his team wins and people buy tickets and sponsors are buying in and everything else. And until the sponsors back off and don't get involved in these things and the schools start realizing what the hell's going on here, this crap is going to continue. But, I don't know how many times I have said that the college basketball and football recruiting is so ugly and there's so much pressure on all these coaches to win because, you know, now all of a sudden they're making $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I really don't know how you curtail it unless – you take people of high profile nature and you put them in jail.
Yeah, and that's what this is why this is a game changer, because the NCAA is incompetent, and the punishment from them, we're going to take away your wins, or we're going to take away a couple scholarships, or you can't participate in postseason tournaments. So what? I mean, now when you've got a different situation with the feds involved, that could change some things. But
it also kind of shows you just how inept the NCAA is.
Of course. The
when the NCAA finally can get involved, it's with these assistant coaches. And, you know, Mark Emmert comes out yesterday and was like, you know, like he shot, well, we're going to support, you know, the FBI and we're going to help them with all their, I don't know why you would be shocked. I mean, everybody knows it's been going on.
Because they don't want to come out and say, what's the opposite? The alternative is, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. We just let it happen. So I guess now is the day of reckoning. You can't say anything else, but we had no idea or this is surprising to us. Because if you go the other way, the next thing you know, you're getting the knock on the door saying, tell us what you knew.
It's kind of interesting. I see Michael Beasley of the Knicks is coming out railing against all this. I think he went to 4 different high schools, played for, I believe, D.C. Assault down in Washington, D.C. I think one of those coaches is probably in jail now. That's one of the AAU programs that is most complicit in a lot of this crap.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's coming out. And then what is he doing? He's bitching and complaining that the players are not getting paid. You know, I get it. You know, then don't go to college then. You know, that's what I'm saying. Don't even bother going to college.
Yeah, I think that they should be allowed to make money off their name. If someone wants to give them an endorsement, I'm okay with that. Paying them to play, though, is too much for me. But if someone wants to have an autograph signing somewhere, they shouldn't be penalized for that, because at that point, their name is worth something and they're a star in their community.
Well, you know, the whole thing about amateur athletics and everything else, I mean, it's just...
It's a farce.
The money is so big now. I understand part of the Beasley argument, but I also know that this is a guy that basically was passed through
yeah, I mean,
because of his remarkable basketball playing skills. Remarkable. And unfortunately, he's been on all these different teams, and now he's been like one of the spokespeople for the Knicks all of a sudden. Just
no,
got here
everywhere.
Like 6 weeks ago. Next thing you know, he's the go-to guy for the quotes.
Yeah.
And he basically came out strong against all this. But really what he's saying, well, the player should be paid. That's what, like, in other words, he's trying to remove himself and saying, with the righteous indignation of saying, well, look, you know, we bring all the money to the schools. We should be paid. Like, oh, well, were you paid?
No. Right. Well, of course, I think he might have been. The lady doth protest too much when it comes to Michael Beasley, I'm sure. But.
It's amazing. It's just a seedy underbelly of college basketball that is ugly. It has always been ugly. Everybody knows it. It's one of the reasons why I know Gary Williams never really recruited in and around the greater Maryland area, because he just didn't want to deal with these people. And because he knew that if he did, it would bring the whole school down.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everybody used to say at Maryland, it's amazing. The big knock on Gary Williams at Maryland is, he can't recruit. He can't recruit. Guy could coach his ass off. Give him 5 guys that will stay in school for 4 years. He will win. Somehow he will win.
Right.
And he will always have a team that plays hard, plays defense, in your face. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're perfect. I'm just saying that he never got involved in any of that stuff, as far as I know. And I remember all the frustration about, I can't recruit. I'm like, yeah, because he's not paying people.
Right, and that's what stinks about this.
You're like, I'd like to think he's getting really high-quality people that want to come to the school because they love the school. They love the building that they built there, and it's a high-ranking program. But, you know, they never won a national championship. Well, we won one, you know, and I get it. But, you know, it's because we're not bringing in one-and-doners. We're trying to stay away from the one-and-doners and trying to bring in guys that want to actually play for the school and hopefully get an education. But I'm not stupid. I'm not naive.
Right.
I know there's other crap that goes on. But, God, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. And the culture puts good guys in tough spots because they want to keep their jobs. They know they have to win. And then they get confronted with these really tough decisions. Should I go the route that this guy's going paying guys? And then you get wrapped up in the thing.
How about if you're a coach at like a mid-major or something? You got no chance.
Right.
Unless, of course, you do build some sort of tradition, and kids
like Wichita State,
yeah,
Greg Marshall,
right, and kids,
Butler,
and they see you on TV because you're making it to the college Sweet 16 or whatever, and then kids say, you know, I want to play for that coach, I want to go see that coach, and I know I'm not going to be a top 100 recruit, but you know, I'll go there for 4 years and I'll go play basketball and I'll have a great college experience and I'll do it. I'd like to think the right way.
Yeah, and luckily for college basketball, there's a lot of those places. Gonzaga, Butler, Wichita State. There's perennial teams now that do it, which we believe is the right way, in the tournament every single year, making runs.
You know, it's amazing to me, like, all right, so Chris Ballin's here at St. John's. And I think, so you go one way or the other. You go get a name guy, you know, an alum that had, you know, was on USA Basketball, was an all-pro basketball player, and you'd like to think that wanting to play for a guy like that, that has those life experiences, that loves the school, would be enough to get kids to come and play for you. I think that's what St. John's is trying to do.
Yeah, but it's too long ago for some of these kids.
Well, I know that, but at least you have a guy that truly loves the school.
Absolutely.
And wants to rebuild it and wants to help. You know, I'm watching my buddy Dave Remington go back and be the interim AD at Nebraska because he wants to help. He wants the greatness to be back there again, but they want to do it the right way, I'd like to think. And then you read, well, St. John's just lost out on this recruit because now he's not going here. He's going somewhere else.
Yeah.
I wonder why he's going somewhere else. You know, I really would want to know whether or not these recruits are still getting paid and are doing this and jumping around because they have people in their lives giving them bad advice.
Yeah. I also think that fans, and a lot of them, want to win regardless of it. And if you put up some sort of poll that said, do you want to win even if it's dirty and see your team go to a Final Four, even though you know some of these guys got paid, I think most of them would still say yes.
Let's go to Dave real quick in New Jersey. Dave, what's happening? You're on with Boomer and Greg.
Good morning, Boomer and Greg. How are you guys?
Great, great. What's going on?
In the early 90s, not in the early 90s, in the 90s, early and mid-90s, I had the opportunity to sponsor a bunch of the NBA teams. And while working with the NBA teams, and working with ex-college coaches who had come to the NBA, I realized that this whole scandal is truly about what I experienced in the 90s. Meaning, first and foremost, it's about winning. We all know that. Secondly, you cannot imagine the greed of the coaches. So anybody that tells me that any of these head coaches that didn't know what was going on, they're absolutely full of crap. These head coaches surround themselves with personal assistants and regular assistants who report back to them every sneeze that's made. And my point being, I had a college coach who came to the NBA, and when I talked to him about my sponsorship with that professional team, the first thing out of his mouth was, what can you do for me? How can you integrate your sponsorship to pay me $250,000 a year, $500,000 a year. So irrespective of what they're making, whether they're making $4 million, $5 million, $10 million, the greed of money amongst coaches is absolutely pathetic. And I just wanted to bring out that point because I experienced it firsthand.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. And, you know, obviously that's the motivation here.
Well,
I mean, to
what's...
win and the adulation that comes along with winning and winning national championships and having all those trophies. You know, when you walk into that school's gym and there is a big trophy case and there's all the national championships and this guy's a great coach and that guy can do this and this is what a – I mean, you know, and then you find out that they have a Fugazi, you know, African-American studies class that, you know, half the school was taking.
Right, and that's what's laughable about Pitino. He's so right. These guys are control freaks. The great coaches are control freaks. They're anal retentive. They know everything that's going on in the program. So you're telling me that you had no idea this stuff was happening and you're Rick Pitino? Give me a break.
You know, if I'm a guy here and I'm a – former football player who got the last scholarship at the University of Maryland. Nobody was paying me anything. I was actually paying them to go down there.
Yeah.
And when I get down there, I'm like the 10th string quarterback, and they're doing everything they can to make you want to leave to test you. They test you for two straight freaking years. I was being tested. Is he going to stay in? Is he going to fail out? Is he going to stay in? Is he going to fail out? You know, he's the 10th string. He's the 8th string. He's the 5th string. He's the 4th string. I mean, it seems like it takes forever. So I like to think I did it the right way. You know what I'm saying? I was not handed anything. I had to earn every step of the way. And they test you every step of the way. If I'm a college football player who went through it that way, how do I know about college basketball? And why have I been railing about it for 10 years?
Yeah.
How do I know about it? You know why? Because it's so
prevalent.
Open.
Yeah, everybody
prevalent
knows.
Open and everybody knows.
Yeah, except Dick Vitale.
I'll tell you what, though.
Totally caught off guard.
You think so? Yeah, I don't think so. I do know that the FBI has been busy as of late. All right.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, morning 6 to 10 on The Fan.
Jerry, what's happening?
All right, good morning, guys. We are brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody, and quite frankly, right now, no one's beating the Yankees. Last night, they took on the Rays. It was closed for a while, and then the bats came out. You had back-to-back home runs from Starlin Castro and Greg Bird that led off the sixth inning. And then to cap the scoring...
Pitch is swung on and hit in the air to deep left field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Another home run for the Yanks. Hicks hits one to the sticks. It's a two-run home run for Aaron. Boy, what a comeback in the last two nights. And the Yankees now take a 6-1 lead.
Sterling on the fence. 6-1 would be the final score. As the Yankees continue to win, they would continue to put pressure on the Red Sox, who got out. They were trailing Toronto 3-0 in the top of the first, then wiped them clean rest of the night.
I was going to say, you know what's amazing with the Yankees, Jer?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, early on in the season, Gregorius was out, Bird was out.
Sanchez
was out, and essentially, you know, you could say that Aaron Judge carried the team.
Yes,
you know, in April and May and all that other stuff.
And Ronald Torres was a
Ronald
big Torres part
was
early
a big
too.
Part
yes,
he was, and the pitching was better than I think most people expected. And all that other stuff. So as you look at the roster right now, and you look at the Yankees, think about this: they have every position player is in the lineup and healthy where they're supposed to be. Every single one: Bird and Hicks and. You know, and Judge and Castro and Gregorius and Sanchez, they're all where they're supposed to be. Of course, Gardner's going to be there. Ellsbury's going to be there.
Ellsbury's played his way back.
Eddie's played his way back into the mix. So just think about that for a second. At no time this year were the Yankees where they are right now as healthy as they are. The entire team is healthy.
And they're firing on all cylinders right now.
I guess the only guy that they're waiting on now is Warren, right?
Yeah, but I think even he is about ready to come back.
Yeah.
And so,
they are in an unbelievable spot. The question that I would have is when you line up their pitchers against, let's say, the Indians pitchers, and you look at them from one to, say, three, or one, it's going to be one to three, are the starting pitchers good enough to keep the Yankees in the game late in the innings, games?
You'd say yes, especially if you're going to get you got from Severino last night, especially if you get from Warren on the clinching game. I'd love to see Tanaka come out and be lights out.
I think you're good with Severino. I'm not worried about that, but I just, you know, is it Sonny Gray? Is it Tanaka? Who's the next
Sonny Gray. It's definitely Sonny Gray.
I would say after the way Tanaka pitched last time out, it's Sonny Gray.
And I wouldn't even care what happens in Tanaka's next start.
Plus, Sonny Gray is going today, so it makes sense that his next start, they beat the Twins, would be game one against the Indians.
That's how it would line up, yes.
Yes, exactly
right. And I'll tell you one thing, and I put this on Twitter last night, too. You know, you wonder about all the position players and how Joe Girardi factors that in and puts the puzzle together. Chase Headley's playing his way off third base. I mean, those two throws early in the game where he's short-hopping Greg Bird.
He was moved to first base.
No, I know that.
First base,
but my point
for the last 6 weeks.
But the point is, if you were thinking of him at third base against, say, a righty pitcher, when you take Todd Frazier out, you're not putting him at third base.
Game. No, but what you would do,
him.
You would have to DH him.
Correct. That's all I'm saying. I think you're going to look at Todd Frazier at third base for
all
the
run. Well, Todd Frazier plays a good, solid.
No, no, he's a great third baseman.
You know, Headley hasn't been over there for a long time. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but his problem has been his throwing, and clearly that hasn't gotten any better.
You're going to blame it on that. He hasn't been over there in a long time. He can't throw to first all of a sudden. He's been in the big leagues for how long?
You know what? When they traded for Todd Frazier, Headley was the first guy to go to Joe Girardi and say, whatever you need me to do, skip.
And he's been great.
You want me to go to first? I'll go to first. You want me to be a DH? You want Todd to play third? I'll do it. That's the unselfishness. That's a part of the fabric of what the Yankees are building here.
Well, he isn't actually, you know, exactly a superstar either, where he can demand everything he wants. I mean, he's not like
he's a nice player,
but he's.
I'm Boomer
Esiason.
Okay, I'm just going to say something, you guys.
Go ahead.
Yankee fans were all over Chase Headley in the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to punch themselves in the face.
Right in the face.
Driving.
While they're driving.
That guy has had a great. I mean, considering what he has done and been asked to do,
yeah, he's been good.
He's been a great teammate. He's had a very solid year for this team.
Solid.
You know, now we're into the playoffs, though. This is what it comes down to. Essentially, you're going to play three series, right? The one-game series, the short season, and the long series. And then you're going to get to the World Series.
You got to win Tuesday first.
Right. I know that. Jerry.
I mean, you've got them. You've got them in the division. You're already lining them up against the Indians.
And then you win the World Series. That's what happens. Then there's the parade after that. Yeah. We got to make sure that we carve out some time for that.
Girardi's got some. He's got some.
Got decisions. He's got decisions to make, man. Absolutely.
Good problem to have.
Yes.
One of those. sports cliches. Everybody's playing well. Good problem to
have.
It's
like they just made a trade at the deadline and they get all these injured guys back.
Yeah, it's tremendous.
I just like how you have them in the World Series already.
Like, he's like, once you win the wild card playing game, then you take care of the Indians, and then they're out, and then you're in the ALCS.
The Indians are not going to have anything to say about it. Yeah, of course.
And then you sweep them, and then it's all about the World Series.
Program director Mark Chernoff has got to be totally like torn here, right? I mean,
he's
know
not he's, torn. That's his right son. He ain't torn.
Wait. We got business. We need the Yankees to win. Come
he's
on.
The A as a dad. He ain't
right,
torn.
Eddie.
I'm sorry.
Do it again, Eddie. Do it again. Press down that baby. That's what it's all about.
So 7-hour post-game shows in the ALCS.
Sweeney Murdy.
Yeah, we
until 3 a.m.
You'll come on at 7:00.
Could you imagine if Mike was on after a playoff game with that post-game show? He was complaining the other day, and rightly so, how long it is.
Bring it back to me. Shut up. Tell Girardi to shut up. God, it's insufferable.
That's funny. Anyway, so...
Hey! Anybody hear me? Hello! Sweetie! Sweetie! Turn my mic off!
Turn his off.
Turn Sweetie's mic off! I'm here! I got like 4 days left before I retire! Let me talk! You think he goes to the parade after they win the World Series?
Have his own float.
The Grandmaster, whatever that is.
The Grandmaster Flash?
Grand Marshal, not the Grandmaster.
Grandmaster.
It's a different. I'm sorry. Grand Marshal. Grandmaster. Totally different thing. Yeah. Grand Marshal. Everybody understand now? Grand Marshal. Honest
my God,
mistake.
That's hilarious.
All right, so the Yankees remain 3 games behind Boston. Now we have 4 left because the Red Sox did beat the Blue Jays 10-7 last night. Home runs in this game for Hanley Ramirez and Xander Bogaerts. Mets beat the Braves 7-1. Rockies over the Marlins 59, so they lead. Colorado leads Milwaukee by 2.5 games. Colorado's got 3 left. The Brewers have 4, but they lost to the Reds last night 6-0, not helping themselves. Cubs beat the Cardinals 5-1. Chicago clinches the NL Central. The Twins clinch the second wild card spot. They lost to the Indians, but the Angels lost, so they are in. We know that. Here's Brian Dozier. Last year, the Twins were 59-103, and here they are. Here comes the postseason.
It's very special to do all this. I think it's even more unique and special. Saying about what happened last year to us, being the worst team to one of the best teams in baseball.
No, they're not one of the best teams, but they're a playoff team for sure, and good for them. So they've done that. I think they are the first team to go from 100 losses in a season to the playoffs in the history of baseball. Astros beat the Rangers 12-2. So here you got Cleveland now 99-59, Houston 98-60 in terms of that top spot in the American League. Thursday Night Football, Packers and Bears tonight on WCBS 880. We'll have it on The Fan following the Yankees. Giants and Tampa Sunday. Let's get to this. This is fun. Ben McAdoo spoke to reporters yesterday, as did Beckham. McAdoo took responsibility for Beckham's antics, but he never mentioned him by name, of course.
Celebration penalties are things you can't have. It's a poor reflection on me, on the program, and on the organization.
Now, there were a couple of media stars yesterday. I thought Ralph Vacchiano was, as we'll play him in a second. Tara Sullivan was great. Bruce Beck was very good. Here is Ralph Vacchiano asking. They asked the questions, though. Well, you know what?
This is awesome.
They asked
great,
the questions that had to be asked. Here's Vacchiano with McAdoo.
You're convinced it won't happen again?
That didn't come out of my mouth.
Now, isn't that a problem?
Yeah, seriously.
That can't be the answer.
I know.
You got to say, I wouldn't expect it to happen again.
Right. Not going
to
happen again.
Are you worried that it will happen again?
I'm not worried about anything. We have a plan for it if it does.
Oh, great. So we're basically waiting for him to do the next ridiculous thing, and we have a plan.
What's the plan? What are you going to do?
Kicking off from the 20 or whatever.
Right, exactly.
You're going to shoot him with a tranquilizer dart in the middle of the celebration?
They're putting steroids in their kicker's thighs.
What is the plan?
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking just right now that Ben McAdoo is like, you got to be freaking kidding me, man.
This is where it's at.
My team is 0-3, and I got this lunatic running around making us all look like a bunch of idiots. And I got to sit here at a press conference, and I got to answer these questions are not stupid.
No, the questions are
good. The questions are fine, and they have every right to ask these questions. I'm with you, Jerry. But from the head coach's standpoint, I'm like, I can't believe that this is what the hell. We're only 3 weeks into the season, and this is what I'm dealing with.
Could you imagine if the season continues to go bad, but he continues to score touchdowns? Here's Beckham. He was asked point blank, what is your reaction to the comments from the owner, John Mara?
We talked.
And did you apologize?
No, I said we talked. Mr. Mayor and I talked.
I mean, nothing. Just nothing.
Wow.
Were you out of line, Odell?
I don't know. I don't think any of us know the rules on what you could do with celebrating. You know, they put in a new celebration thing to kind of make it seem as if, you know, the players can celebrate. And then you celebrate and, you know, you only have 40 seconds. So if you celebrate for 20, you got 20 seconds to run on and kick a field goal. So I don't really know.
Is he serious?
Did they have to put the urination clause in there for you to know that that wasn't okay?
The whole thing is, I mean, honestly, he says he'll adjust the touchdown moves.
I don't really know how it works, but I do know going forward I have a lot better celebration.
Next, he'll hump a goalpost. See if that's allowed.
You remember that? Somebody did that. I think it was.
Antonio Brown.
Yeah. He jumped onto the goalpost.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's
down.
Right.
That was actually funny. That was pretty cool.
He did twerk though, Antonio Brown.
Well, three twerks.
Yeah.
You can only twerk once. You can't twerk three times.
One pump, two pump. Let's go.
I mean, your boy Keegan Michael Key had us pumping on. Inside the NFL the other night.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lunatic gif out there of you doing that.
Oh, there is. Yeah, I'm sure somewhere.
Four or five pumps from Boomer.
He's like, one, two, one, two. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, get on
pump
your
fisting.
Knees.
Pump fisting.
Yeah, that'll be Jerry? The next celebration.
Pump fisting.
Yeah, right. Odell will be like, man, there was nothing about pump fisting in the handbook. Nothing. So I did it.
Whoops. Texas, this is a nice story. Al and I covered this before. Texans rookie quarterback Deshaun Watson donated his first game check of $28,000 to three women who work in the stadium cafeteria in Houston who were hit pretty hard by the hurricanes. That's a great,
story. How about
great
putting that on
story.
The front page of the newspaper?
It doesn't sell the papers.
Why not? I mean, what a great thing. Is that kid got his, I mean, I don't know.
I agree.
Right now, that the kid's got his crap together, man. You know what I'm saying? He has got his stuff together.
I agree. Good for him.
I hate the fact that they had to do it on TV.
Well, but even it's even like what I said to Al before, too. You know, Brandon Marshall of the Broncos, he gets all the headlines for Colin Kaepernick comments from yesterday.
Yeah.
And why was he talking? Because he was receiving an award for all the great work he's doing in the community. Yeah. And the headline is, it's literally at the very end why he was speaking. And the whole article is about these comments in the middle of it.
Right.
And we just lose the good stuff.
Yeah. Wow, I'll tell you, that's a great move. And then also, do you have the Jake Elliott story?
I do, yes. Yeah, so he would not accept the money from Carson Wentz. So the
charity.
Two agreed to give it and donate it.
How awesome is that?
It's great. I mean, this happens all the time, but no one cares.
No, well, I care. I absolutely care.
So
I care 100%. I care. You know, and the problem is like NFL fans are out there just hammering the league, and I understand. I get, you know, the patriotic fans and everything else, but there's so many guys that do so many great things.
So why do you have a problem that they filmed the Deshaun Watson thing then?
I know.
It gets some more play on TV and on Twitter. People see it.
I know. Just sometimes it's, you know. I don't know.
Maybe because it feels disingenuous,
I mean, he's a great kid, and he gets it. You know what I mean? It's just great. It's just,
as if you don't need your head to swell anymore because you are
people,
Boomer.
And those people are crying when they're getting the money.
I
mean,
yeah,
it's
a good moment.
The NFL wants. This is what the NFL wants right here. And this is what the players deliver over and over and over again. Okay, what's the matter?
Could you let you feel better about yourself just for a couple of minutes?
I need to feel better about myself. Yeah.
Well, I know you don't, yes. But so the president spoke yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And no, I'm going to give you something good. I'm not going to say how he said the NFL is dying or any of that stuff.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm going to say the positive out of all of this stuff, and this is good for you.
Frankly, the only thing that's doing well in the NFL is the pregame.
Oh!
Trumpy McTrumpy.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
So you're good. I didn't touch on the Louisville stuff. You guys did it for 20 minutes.
Yes.
We're good. I'll do more next hour.
Louisville,
so.
But when do we see all these other schools?
Well, yes, it's, I'm sure, the tip of the iceberg. Exactly.
Yes, I would think so.
And there you have it, guys.
How about that? The pregames are killing it.
Yeah. Someone should ask him a follow-up.
What's that?
Someone should ask him a follow-up. What are you watching?
No one asked.
What are you?
Not that I saw.
Are you watching the NFL today?
Well, I don't know. I don't.
You like that
Trumpy McTrump face?
All right, 6:45 on the Fan.
Listen to Boomer Esiason morning 6 to 10 on the Fan.
There's a good way for people to lose weight.
Okay, good for
and
me.
And I know you were talking about this yesterday.
Got to do it.
You're all concerned about it and everything else.
Yep.
And it's a very easy thing to do.
It's stop eating.
Well, no. According to Captivate, it says people who get on the scale every single day and step on the scale every single day, as opposed to, say, once a week or once a month or once every 2 months, whatever, tend to lose weight because you're more aware of how much weight you're carrying around.
Well, that makes sense.
And, I mean, you're what? How old are you?
I am 35 years old.
And you have a baby on the way, right?
I do have a baby on the way, yes.
This is great. We're going to have a reveal party, I hear.
Yes, there's going
That's
to be a
That's wonderful.
Reveal party.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with a reveal party?
Nothing. Listen, I want you to celebrate the birth of your child just like anybody else would, and I want you to be happy about that.
Well, right, of
but
course.
But I want your son or daughter, because you haven't revealed it yet, so we don't know what it is,
right.
but
It'll
I want your son and daughter to have their dad around for a long time.
I mean, I'm not
So
that
I ordered
unhealthy.
On Amazon a scale for you.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so I'm going to have the scale for you here at the station. So no matter whatever happens to you, because you'll either be here with me in the morning or you'll be over there in the morning.
Right.
You're going to be here every day. So I'm going to buy you a scale, and every day you're going to step on that scale. Because you are walking around here.
Yeah.
Like, you are 35, right?
I'm 35.
You
yeah.
are walking around here like you're 70 years old.
Yeah.
We can't have that.
It has to do with the driving,
And your
I think.
Kid, you're having a kid. You got to have a reveal party and everything
yeah.
else.
Right.
And I want you at that reveal party to stand up and say, I love my wife, I love my kid, and I'm going to make sure that I am healthy to take care of both of them and to make sure that we move forward with health conscious on our mind.
We've got a 3-foot hero coming for that
Good,
reveal
perfect.
Party.
Nice, so exactly.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I say all that stuff while I'm spitting out Capicola at the same time?
I say, Boomer, you got Bobby to quit smoking with the pressure of you have a child on the way. That worked.
Well, that's it did work. I put the guilt on him.
Yeah, it worked. So
I don't want
job.
You to get diabetes. Yeah. I don't want you to have some sort of stroke.
Yeah.
I don't want you to have, like, you know, give yourself like a sports hernia or something
this
walking
is
around.
Really bumming me out.
I'm like, just telling really? You. I'm like, I'm all ready for it. I'm ready
I mean,
to like, the
I'm
whole
not
let's
morbidly
go.
Obese. I'm probably 30 pounds overweight. If I lost 30 pounds, I'd be back to where I need
if
to be.
If you lost 30 pounds, you'd be like the handsomest guy around here. You'd be like, you'd be the best looking dude in the building.
You think?
You'd be like eye candy.
Oh, really? Yeah. All right.
We could actually keep our simulcast.
Chicks would be like, who's that guy?
That guy.
Yeah, well, we don't need any of that.
Look at that. You got a pretty, you got a good looking face.
Well, thanks,
you shaved
man.
Your face. Now I see you're letting it grow back again.
Well, it has to grow back. I have to have the beard back.
Why?
I need to hide my chin
see,
fat.
That's wrong. That's wrong.
Even when I was thinner, I had
Amazon
a beard.
Amazon said that the scale will be here tomorrow.
Really?
Yes.
You really ordered a scale?
Yes.
Amazon Prime.
I was thinking about you yesterday. I was talking about you. Were your ears ringing at all?
No, they were not. No.
Right.
I was too hungry to be focused on.
A lot of people
that.
Seem to like you.
Oh, really? Like
they
who?
Do.
Who likes me?
People on Twitter, strangers. You know, I don't know. They kind of like Gio.
You actually look at that, huh?
I do.
You put some stock in that?
Of course I do.
I haven't looked at Twitter in 3 days.
Are you afraid?
I'm not afraid of it. I just don't need to go into the vortex of it. You got to remember, I was on CBS Sports Radio. It's where you kind of like, you know, not as many people are paying attention as they are here in the great
yes.
WFAN.
Yes.
So, you know, Twitter, you look at, you get a couple guys from Alabama saying, hey, that was funny what you did. And I'd write back and say, thank you. And then now when you're here,
yes.
you get a lot more stuff.
People are passionate.
So
they're passionate about their politics, passionate
right.
about their sports. This is New York. Everybody's
course,
got an attitude.
Totally
Everybody's got
it.
An opinion.
So
yes.
I said, you know what? Let's stay away for a couple days.
For example, Wayne Newman Jr. checks in.
Yes.
F yourself, a-hole.
Wayne didn't say that, now, did he?
You got to love that.
what did Wayne say there?
Wayne checking in, garbage radio.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Thanks,
Perfect.
Wayne.
I appreciate it. Hate it, man. See, who needs that stuff?
I don't know. Let's go to Brian in Rockland. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man?
All
what's
right.
going on, fellas?
Hey.
I was just, I'm a middle school teacher, and I'm thinking that Odell is very much like every other typical athletic eighth grade boy. He's arrogant. He's defiant. He doesn't want to listen to anyone. He just does whatever he wants to do. Maybe it's because nobody told him what to do as he's growing up. I'm not exactly sure. What do you guys think?
Well, I'll tell you, it's an interesting personality, to say the least.
Right.
And that personality pushes people to the brink of just anger and frustration. But there's also that part of him that is and when I talk to his teammates, every single guy will tell you on the practice field that he's like – so competitive, which is what makes him great on the field.
Yeah, I think there is a point about that. When you get to be Odell Beckham Jr., everybody around you wants to be around you, and nobody's going to keep you in check because they want to continue to be around you, and then you get so emboldened by that, you feel like you can do so wrong, and there is no authority figure out there that can tell you to do things differently.
You know, I'm not sure, I don't know about his background and everything, but I'm sure that somebody in his family was probably watching a game thinking everything was great, and then all of a sudden they got down on all fours, and they went, oh, boy. I don't know. Let's go to Brian in Manhattan. Brian, what do you got, man?
Hey, Boomer, love the show.
Thank you.
Before I get to my Giants question, how's the golf game? You heading over to Liberty at all?
I'm not going to go this weekend to go to the Presidents. I have a big match this weekend, so I'll be playing my own golf. So that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, so that Sterling Shepard touchdown that wasn't a touchdown?
The first one or the second one where he fell out of the back of the other side?
Where he fell to the ground and maintained. Would it have been a touchdown if he, because he did get the 2 feet in and just spiked the ball right away as some sign of celebration and then fell to the ground?
Yes, that would have been a touchdown.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to complete the catch when you go to the ground, and because the ball came out when he went to the ground, it was not a touchdown. If he caught it 2 feet in and then just still had it in his hand and threw it into the stands, that's a touchdown.
No, the fan in me, Brian, hates that rule. The football fan in me hates that rule because so many teams have been victimized by the fact that the ball has been caught, he's out of bounds now, and he falls down and the ball comes out.
Yeah.
And I know what they want. You know, the football analyst in me knows the textbook rule that is the way it should be called. And every team plays by the same rules. I just hate the fact that players have to do more when you're a wide receiver as opposed to if you're a running back.
Yeah, it's common sense.
Because
that was
if you have the ball in your hands as a running back and you break the plane of the goal line.
Smack the ball right
out. And
then
the ball gets smacked out.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Because the moment that ball breaks the plane, it's automatically a touchdown. If you are a wide receiver, you're in bounds. You have your feet in bounds. You look at the replay. You have the ball in control.
Right.
Everything is fine. And then the moment you're off the field to play, you fall down and the ball comes out.
It's a touchdown. Should be a touchdown.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It should be a touchdown. But the rule book definitively says you have to go all the way through the ground with the catch, which makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Right.
It's one thing if you are bobbling the ball. I would get that.
If you got full control 2 feet down.
You have the catch. You have it in your arms. You have your feet down. And now as you're falling out of bounds where your feet are off the ground and you are no longer in the field to play.
Yeah.
That still is a part of the play in the eyes of the officials and the rule book.
Yeah, there was no juggle by Shepard in that situation at all until he went to the ground, then the ball came out.
Let's go to Bobby in Yapag. Bobby, what's happening?
Well, how are you?
All right, good. What's going on?
I'm calling for two reasons. One, Boomer, when you were younger, did you play summer league baseball, on a traveling team?
Yes, I did.
Because I used to play for UMass, and I'm not sure if we played you, but that was years ago. And
yeah, it was probably like a 77, 78, somewhere around there.
Wow. Exactly.
And what's the other thing?
The other thing was Craig Giannotti, which his father was a school teacher at William Floyd High School.
My mother was a school teacher at William Floyd High School. She was an English teacher.
Did your mother have a beard or you know, like a mustache or something?
No, she did not. Okay. She's a woman all the way through.
Your mother was. I had her as a school teacher.
Wow, there you go. Look at that.
And Al Dukes, I had a cup of coffee with once. Eddie Scazzeri, I got one of his blind dogs.
No, yes. I was saying to Eddie before this guy got on, I go, there's no way this could be true because this guy on the phone sounds like he's 80. And Greg's only 35.
Yeah.
So there's no chance Greg's mother was this guy's.
And also, he said his father.
Right. What is he doing?
Well, he doesn't remember. You know, I mean, he might, have had
a
few too many cocktails, in his lifetime.
Oh, I was going to say this morning, it's only 7:20 if he's calling up.
Well, not this morning, but I'm just saying he's an older gentleman.
How old can he be, though? My mom's 71. So if he had my mom in high school, I mean, they can't. And she was at Floyd. I mean, it can't be that old, this guy. He's got to be in his 50s, maybe.
Well, he said he played against me in high school baseball.
Right, so
Travelton, which had to be like 76, 7, and 8.
So are you an older gentleman?
Yeah, I'm 56 years old.
That's not an older gentleman. Not these days.
No.
Because you said this guy's an older gentleman, so you're basically saying that you're an older gentleman.
I mean, I look younger than you do.
You do at this point.
And I'm 21 years older than you.
Yeah, well, you don't look younger. You look better. How about that?
Well, I mean, look.
You look better. You look better.
I enjoy myself a little bit. I have a little fun,
Right. Of course you do. Yeah. No, you're definitely a better-looking person in better shape at your age than me by
I'm going to help you. Whether we work together in the future or not, I'm going to help you.
Right. Well, the hair
because I like you. You know, remember I took you to Minnesota. You reminded me that.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, I remember.
Did I take you to Minnesota too?
Yeah, you did the next year. Went to Minnesota. Yep.
I took you on two trips?
Two trips, back-to-back years, yeah.
I swear to God, I didn't remember that until you reminded me. Yeah. I had totally forgotten that.
I know. That's one of the great moments
of my
life.
Hey, you want to work with Giannotti? You know him at all? I'm like, not really. I said, I'll work with him. I don't care. I can work with anybody.
Yeah, and meanwhile, he asked me. I'm like, yeah, he loves me. He took me to Green Bay. He took me to Minnesota. Yeah. We're from Long Island.
Right.
He played high school football in Long Island. I play high school football in Long Island. He remembers. We talk in the morning. He goes, hey, G. And I say, hey, Boom. And then we have a little conversation. So he knows everything about me. And then Eric Spitz back there goes, Boomer knows nothing about you. Not a damn thing. He came in here, he's asking me all these questions. He doesn't know a damn thing about you.
Quail Otis sees us! He loved us!
Exactly.
I was so heartbroken.
But I'm glad that you actually reminded me. Now I remember. Now
yeah,
it's
you're
okay.
A good guy. You've done some good things. You know, taking care of a little fat old me. Want to go to a Minnesota Vikings game. Feeling bad.
You're good, man. Let's go to Jack in Cincinnati. Jackie, what's happening?
Hi, Mr. Esiason. I just want to thank you, sir. You actually are the reason why I was a Cincinnati Bengals fan growing up, even as a kid. But I'm actually an Air Force veteran, and I'd like to thank you, sir, for what you've said for our veterans. I think you're a great person. You do a lot of good, especially what you've done for cystic fibrosis people.
Yep. Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it. It's very nice. Thank you very much.
Greatest man.
God bless you, sir.
Well, God bless you, and thank you for your service.
Man of the year. Absolutely. Man of the damn year. Time Magazine, not just the NFL Man of the Year.
No. That's Colin Kaepernick. He's Time Magazine Man of the Year. I actually thought he was going to talk about the Bengals and why are they 0-3 and all that other stuff.
That's not what it said on this call screener. Let's not lie to the audience.
The guy's from Cincinnati. The guy is from Cincinnati. I figured he was gonna get
this guy
right
wants to praise Boomer illogically.
Let's go to Patty in Fairhaven. Patty, what's happening?
Hey, Boom, Greg, how you doing?
What's up, Pat?
Good. What's going on?
Love the show. Get me through my commute every day, man.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I got three boys. I have a 7-year-old who hasn't taken his Beckham jersey off in like 2 years. His belly's showing from the thing. I got to get him new jerseys the other day. We go to the store. All three boys want the Beckham jerseys. I'm like, guys, come on. You can't. Let's not do this. Look at Manning. Look at Shepard. Look at whoever. But we're not getting Beckham jerseys. So, in the end, no Beckham jerseys. And I feel like that's one way I can, you know, not support this guy. I'm a Giant fan. Don't get me wrong. I love the fact that he catches touchdowns. But I can't support him, man. He's a knucklehead.
Well, I feel it's interesting.
Yeah, know? I feel like kids rebel against that, though. Like, when the parent says you can't wear that jersey, they're going to go out there and they're going to find that jersey. They're going to like that guy even
well,
more.
Well, you know, kind of in a way, Odell Beckham Jr. is rebelling.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course, he's been rebelling his whole career.
It's really weird. You know, this is the one thing about an NFL locker room, 53 personalities, everybody's different. Everybody comes from these different backgrounds. That's why you hear about the unity and all that other stuff, and that's why this past weekend was very predictable. The interesting thing is that I had players kind of like Odell, just like out there, just completely out there. Great at what they did. You just didn't know who you were talking to day to day. There was always a different person. And some days they were angry. Some days they were, you know, jovial. Some days they were great in practice. Other days they were bad in practice. And it gets somewhat, it's heavy lifting. It's mentally heavy lifting.
It's exhausting. And also, if the guy isn't performing, that adds another level to it. And Odell, we don't have to worry about that, at least.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
You know, I don't know if I should bring this up or not.
What's that?
We got a huge football game tonight. It's on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
It's Thursday Night Football. It's the Bears at the Packers. It's Lambeau. It's the longest standing rivalry in the NFL. I think the teams are 94-94-6.
It's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
94-94-6, and it's Aaron Rodgers. It's the great running backs for the Bears and everything else.
Jordan
and
Howard.
It'll be the first time we all get to listen to Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. Because I've only heard bits and pieces because I'm watching all the other games and everything else. But I'll be locked in tonight to hear exactly what it sounds like and how many plays is he going to predict and get right. I'm going to keep a tally tonight.
It's not so much that. You'll hear a little bit of that.
It's the stuff Greg was doing yesterday.
Right. What you're going to hear is 3rd and 1, pass over the middle. He dropped the ball, Jim! He dropped the ball! Oh, my God! Someone's going to pick it up! Who's going to pick it up? Someone's got it! I don't know! Oh, I can't believe this is fun. This is so much fun. I can't believe it. And you know what? Rob Gronkowski, he is hobbling off the field. It might be his back. He might be done for the year. And I know about backs, Jim, because I didn't stay on the field for the last couple of years because basically I'm all made out of balsa wood.
So he's overly excited.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Will he be nervous tonight?
I don't know.
Thursday night football, or is he so far beyond it?
From what I have heard, I have not heard nervousness. I've heard energy, right, for sure. I've heard a little bit over the top energy, like you said.
Well, everybody's kissing his ass. So
but it's
got
okay. But it's okay. But it's just a matter of getting the flow and getting the mechanism of doing a game with somebody you've never worked with before. It's not easy.
I love Tony Romo. He's the man.
True Chris Sims.
I love that. So we'll get to be able to watch. And also tonight, it's being streamed on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. This is the first one of those.
Yes, it is.
We got to make sure that we're
rolling. The Jags Ravens from London was on Yahoo.
And that was only on Yahoo unless you were in the two markets.
Yeah.
Because all of us were like, where is this game?
So was
where is this game?
Yeah, the Amazon thing I don't understand, though, because it's on everywhere. Why would you watch it on Amazon Prime? Just for the cord cutters? Is that basically it? Are there enough cord cutters
out there? I think there are now.
But I feel like the cord cutters are mostly non-sports fans.
Agreed.
Though.
All right, well, here's the amazing thing.
Here's
the amazing thing. So we all know it's on CBS tonight, right?
That's right.
And Amazon Prime is basically doing their thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does it say? This is on the Amazon Prime network of page, the internet page, right?
The website?
Yeah, the website. Yeah.
There you go.
When did you quit football? Were you a nose tackle? Hey, come over here. Look at me.
I can
see it. What does it say here?
It said also on NFL Network and NBC.
Yes. It's not on NBC.
No, that's bad.
Right.
Call somebody on the internet. Someone screwed up their internet page.
Yes, that's the Amazon Prime homepage.
Wow, that's pretty bad. Someone, Sean McManus, where are you, man?
They'll be all over it, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I'm so confused at Thursday Night Football. You can watch it. I mean, it was only on the NFL Network. It's on NBC. It's on CBS. I can stream it here. I mean, I thought nobody cared about Thursday Night Football. You make it more confusing to watch, and then you wonder why everybody hates it.
You know, I will say this, that this should be a highly rated game because it's Chicago, it's Green Bay, it's Aaron Rodgers, it's Lambeau Field. So it's a good matchup for Thursday Night Football, at least on paper and by name recognition. The fact that Chicago's actually played reasonably well, plus Green Bay is so beat up.
Yeah.
So they'll be in great shape after just 2 days rest. That's why these things suck. No practice, no recovery.
Yeah, but last week's Thursday night game between the Rams and the 49ers was awesome.
Yeah, but it was the Rams and the 49ers.
But that's the outlier. I mean, most of these games are bad games. They are.
I'm not saying they aren't, but I'm just saying because Green Bay is a little bit beat up, that's like the great equalizer when you're playing against a great quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. If they were 100% healthy, I don't think the Bears would stay within 10 points.
Right, but if this is 6-3 in the fourth quarter, people are going to be
I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to actually be a much closer game than you think, and I think it's going to be one of those fourth quarter, last quarterback that has the ball game who's going to win.
But I think what Greg's saying is you don't want it to be a sloppy, crappy game.
Just because it's close doesn't mean it's good.
Right. Whereas last week was really good.
It was.
Last week was fun.
I mean, there were a lot of great games on Sunday as well.
Yep.
So there you have it. Got an update, Jer?
I do. We're brought to you by Monmouth University, celebrating 25 years of Division I football. Since we're talking about football, kind of switch things up. I'll get back to the Yankees in a moment. That game will be on WCBS 880. We'll have it on the fan following the Yankee game. Here was some of the sound from the Giants yesterday. Here's Ben McAdoo. How is he handling 0-3 as a team right now?
Yeah, we have our noise blockers on. The guys have been focused. They did a good job yesterday in the team meeting.
And so the noise blockers blocking out the media and the fans for all the criticisms, as you can imagine. Here's McAdoo. Now, what will you do if your boy Odell Beckham Jr. pulls this stuff again? Last week we know about the dog thing and the crawling and blah, 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 blah.
We have a plan for it. We're going to handle it internally, and we have a plan for it moving forward.
Follow up.
Is he going to start on Sunday? Odell?
I'm done talking about it. We have a plan for it. We're handling it internally, and we have a plan moving forward.
We have a plan for it, meaning that, okay, we expect it again, and if it happens again, this is what's going to happen.
But what is the plan?
I bet you the plan, I would think the plan is this. Look, Odell, we love you. We want you to be here. We want to give you every opportunity to be the player that you are and to express yourself appropriately. However, if you do it again, we're gonna suspend you for conduct detrimental to the team.
There's no way that that happens.
He won't even mention the guy by name. You think they're gonna suspend him?
I'm telling you.
They're gonna suspend their best player because he does touchdown celebration?
If he takes another penalty in that fashion, I'm not saying if he gets into it with a player on the field. I'm saying in that fashion, in a fashion that is unbecoming of a New York Giant football player in the eyes of the owner.
I could say I would not be
surprised. I would not be surprised.
I think they
probably have reached their breaking point.
Well, what's the precedent for that? Has there ever been a player that's been suspended by the team for celebrations?
It's not just celebrations. It's insubordination.
It's everything. It's insubordination. It's hurting the team. We've talked to you 10 different times, 50 different ways about doing things and carrying yourself a certain way, and yet you continue to go against what we're asking you. And it is insubordination.
That's exactly why
I could see that could happen. If he does something stupid like that, I could see that happening.
But let's say they win this game and they have a shot at least getting back to 3-3, and you think
it may not be this game. But it could be a game 3 games from now.
But this goes back to the whole thing when he did that nonsense with Josh Norman and the Panthers, and Coughlin was fighting for his job and didn't do anything because he's still producing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, what do you do? He's going to help us win, but he's a pain in the ass.
And I'll tell you what, it's really hard. It's easy for us that sit here that aren't dealing with him every single day and know him personally. You know, I know him a little bit just from interviewing him, but at the end of the day, if you're there every single day with him and you see whatever troubled human being he may be, you tend to be a little bit more sensitive to that than the outside world is.
I feel like his teammates like him, though.
Well, yeah, they love him. But I would just say those of us on the outside world, the media and everything else, you know, we're just throwing the slings and arrows at him left and right.
Because it looks ridiculous.
It does.
It looks ridiculous.
And it's not easy. It's just not easy to deal with folks like this, especially folks that are that highly gifted, that have such a sense of who they are. And the agents in his ear are saying, oh, you're going to be a $100 million player.
It's not just the agents, everybody. You know?
Well, quotes like this to me, I think, make you a little uneasy as well if you're a Giant fan. This was Beckham's reaction. I played it last hour. I'll play it again. Reaction to the comments from the owner, John Mara.
We talked.
And did you apologize?
No, I said we talked. Mr. Mara and I talked.
I mean, at some point you say, yeah. But maybe he didn't. I don't know. Here's your boy.
A chance to apologize. Mr. Mara might have said, look, yeah, at Odell, come here.
Sit down and shut
up. I pay you a lot of money. You want a lot more money from me. We are the New York Giants, and this is how we carry ourselves, and this is my expectation for you on the field. And this is what I expect as the guy who is paying your checks or signing your checks. And maybe that was it. Maybe that was the simple get right to the point, and he had no chance to
think you do, though. Even right after that, you go, I'm sorry that you feel that way. I'm sorry I let you down. Won't happen again.
Just say, I apologize. We cleared the air. We move on.
Right. Well,
and then
it's
to be done.
You have two kids. You're going to have a reveal party. So I
are you really?
Yes, he is.
My wife wanted to have one of these things. So what am I supposed to tell her? No?
No.
Well, I can't do that. She's excited about it.
Okay.
What's the gimmick?
I'm actually not sure. It's her and her older sister that are putting it together. So I'm not sure. I'm just there.
Did they do like gift? I'm trying to think.
Like, I've seen some things on the internet, Boomer, where there's like a glass ball filled with either blue powder or pink powder, and the wife pitches it to the husband. He hits it with the bat.
Yeah, I don't think it's that
nice.
One.
I've
seen that.
Don't hurt your sciatica, though.
Right. Oblique tear.
Yes.
I don't think it's that one.
Does this replace the shower, though?
I don't, but this is not a gift thing, though.
And when you do have the shower, is it going to be a couple shower?
I don't believe that it is. No, it's not.
Shower?
They do those. They call them, what do they call them?
Couple showers.
No, but there's another word for it, too. It's a Jack and Jill. That's what they call it. A Jack and Jill shower.
By the
shower.
Way, the women that go to these things don't want to go to them.
No.
They're going to bring the men to them, too?
Yeah, I know. It is. Listen.
It's just a money grab. It's one money grab after another. That's all it is.
But the reveal party is not. The reveal party where, you know, we'll have the whole sandwich, the 3-foot hero, and then everybody will be happy and some drinks.
So is there like the big build-up, get everybody drunk, and then at the end we do the reveal, or is it done in the beginning, and then it's, can we leave now?
No, you do it too early. Everybody's taillights.
Right, exactly. You gotta save it for the end. So you eat, you drink, and then, all right, here we go.
pop
Goodbye.
pink and blue, and away we go.
Will you put no gifts, please, on the invitation? Clearly,
I think people know. I'm only. This is not like an invitation we're sending out. I think we're just calling a few close friends. I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, I'm just a prop in this thing.
Yes,
right?
I do. Actually.
I mean, that's what it is, and I want to make sure that she's happy. She wants to do it. She's happy. That's great.
And that's great. And good for you.
And the same thing with the wedding. I was a prop. Whatever you want, sure. I'm just here for the day.
When do I say I do?
Right. I mean, we got in a fight when we were planning a wedding. She goes, "I want you to come in and check out the limo with me." And I said, "Oh, let me ask you a question. If the limo that you like, right, I don't like, and I say I want to go with a different limo, are you going to listen to me?" And she goes, "No." And I said, "Then I'm not coming."
That's right.
Are you crazy? I'm going to waste my time and go out there and do this.
By the way, one of the very few arguments I've ever had with my wife was when we did the registering.
Yeah.
For when we were getting married. And I said,
"You wanted to do Sears and she wanted to do Saks."
No, not at all. It was more a matter of, "Do you like these dishes?" "Yeah, they're great. But you're not giving me an opinion." "I don't care."
Right.
"They're dishes."
Right.
"Pick them out. We're good."
You got to get involved with the dishes, Jerry.
But I'm with Greg, though.
Just make like you like
whatever you want.
Dishes.
We're there. Those we're supporting. We're good.
Awesome.
Whatever you want.
No.
Well, I'm not going to lie about it.
Right.
I'm not going to lie. I don't get excited about those things.
I love the limo. Oh, the limo is beautiful.
I'm not doing that. I just said whatever you want.
Don't be a phony. Right. That's all.
Well, do whatever you want. That's not fun. It's not like you're not even participating.
At the end of the day, does it matter?
It's like getting up in between the breaks, you know, when guys are talking guy stuff, and instead you just get up and you leave so you can go talk war crap.
By the way, you should have saw the moment that he and Brian Jones had yesterday in the newsroom. It was embarrassing.
What, me and Brian?
I miss you, man.
I do.
I know you're down the hall, but I miss you.
No, I told him. It's weird.
Mr. Jones. I do kind of
miss him. Is Brian Jones the
we
guy
got
that
a thing
in small doses he's
going
great.
On.
You know, when you see Brian every single day,
yes.
And he's just yelling at
he just
you,
just wears you out.
It wears you out.
He
but then
totally
you. You don't have him, then you see him a little bit. I got excited.
Hey, I got him in here for an hour on Friday, Football Friday. Oh, God, man. I'm telling you, I'm worn out. It's like a double shot of espresso.
It is crazy.
Boomer! He walks in. We're going to do some football picks.
And that's a 5:30.
I know. It's absolutely
insane. Can't wait for 9.
So how much time do you spend learning how to impersonate somebody, or does it just come natural?
It's always come natural. There's some guys I can't do, though. I'm not like these guys on Saturday Night Live that sit there where they listen to a guy's voice over and over and over again and work on it. It either happens or it doesn't.
So, but Brian's an easy one.
Well, yeah.
Well, he's a totally easy one because everything about him is over the top.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same thing
same
every
thing
day.
Same thing with Mike. Same, very easy.
Well, yeah. But Beningo's easier because Beningo, it's the same thing every
well, Mike's the same
day.
Thing every day, right?
Yeah, but he's a little bit more nuanced, Mike, because he's got the low Mike, he's got the sleepy Mike, he's got the very excited Mike, he's got the angry Mike, he's got the laughing Mike, the I'm around a woman Mike. You know, there's a different...
What's the around a woman Mike like?
It's a lot happier. You know, smiles. You know, hello to you. How are you?
That's true.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing here? Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm the best there is.
Right, as opposed to seeing me, you ruined your career. What are you doing? Look at you. You should have stayed in Pittsburgh.
Clam up.
I heard that the other day. Clam up, will you? Was that yesterday with Mike and Montclair? Clam up. Look at you, loser. Nobody's listening to you in there.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, he's got a point.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say that. But, I mean, you know, whatever. He's Mike. Hey. Jerry's not done. You're going to go to a call?
We're going to go to a break. We got to go to a break.
That's Yankees won. Mets won.
Of course the Yankees won. Yankees are on fire, Jerry. You know
on
that.
Fire.
Let's see if Sonny Gray can keep it going tonight and everybody feeling good about going into the playoffs. And that wild card game against, most likely, the Minnesota Twins, assuming that the Red Sox, what was it, magic number 1 or 2 or something
magic
like that?
Number's two.
Two, right. Yeah.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
Well, you probably don't know this. I was invited to do or asked to do the first 3 seasons of Dancing with the Stars. And I'll never forget when they first asked me. I was shocked because, you know, you're thinking, there's no way I'm going to do this. I think that's when Jerry Rice did it, right? My daughter, Sydney, at the time was, I think, 13 years old.
Yeah.
I think she was 13 years old. She goes, Dad, you're not doing it.
Really?
Yeah, because she was more thinking that I would embarrass her in her life. And she goes, you know what? You're not doing it. So I was just telling the story how I was invited the first 3 years of Dancing with the Stars, and I know you obviously came in second, David Ross. But the fact of the matter is my daughter would not let me do it.
Hey, if my daughter would have been old enough and known the embarrassment that she was going to go through, I don't know if she'd have let me do it either.
But you did say, well, man. Though. You did really, really well.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of camera tricks. You know, you get out there, and it's one of the most frightening things I've ever been a part of, and I've been a part of some crazy scenes, but 12, 15 million people going out there and dancing, which is not my, you know, I tell everybody my idea of dancing was like back grinding up on my wife when I was in high school, you know, it's like, yeah. That was my idea of ballroom dancing,
well,
I guess.
You're surprised. So let me ask you this. Obviously, you know, you have a great story. You're part of the Cubs, the World Series. You know, your teammates love you. You're getting a lot of airtime and all that other stuff. How do they know that you would be good for that show? How do they find that out?
You know, Dina Katz kind of gets the talent, and she called me, and I actually turned it down the first couple of times. I was like, I appreciate it, but that's not for me. And Jerry Rice, the guy who wrote my book, knew Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice said it was one of the greatest things he's ever done.
Right.
And I started doing some research about how many ex-athletes had so much fun on the show, and I'm like, you know what? I'll probably be voted off in a couple weeks. I'll give it a shot. My wife actually pushed me. She was like, do something outside your... Yeah,
really?
She was into it.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of my career, I kind of appreciated things a lot more and tried to do things outside of my box a lot more in my last season. I had the greatest year of my life.
Right.
And so this was along those lines of do something outside of your box. I'm always pushing to my kids that it's okay to try something that you're not good at and give your best. And, I don't know that I knew what I was signing up for, but if you don't follow the show, you don't realize how big of a market and audience they have. And it's been a life changing thing, and you learn a lot about yourself and the frustrations you go through on that journey. It's intense.
Now, your wife liked the idea at first, but then when she sees your dance partner, she starts freaking out into that.
Well, the good thing is I had a 23-year-old, the most amazing girl, Lindsay Arnold. It was absolutely phenomenal, and she was so great. I tell her, everybody thinks, is there drama there? I'm like, there's zero drama. We've got nothing in common other than she's a great person. I tell people all the time, her favorite movie is like Lego Batman. So that's how young she is, you know.
Right,
so
yeah.
It was like having another family member, like having a daughter. And that's really,
yeah, sure it was.
You felt that, you feel that connection because you're with them all the time.
And I guess they also tell you, because I remember when I was asked, they said, look, you could just practice as much as you want. Your partner will come to you, or
yep,
you'll go to the partner, and you could do as much as you want or as little as you want. So how much did you do?
That was my hardest part. I did every day. I needed every day, every minute. But she actually, the hardest part was traveling. So I live in Tallahassee, Florida, North Florida, and we would travel back and forth from L.A. every week. I'd get done. I'd get on the red eye. My kids, the reason why I retired, to spend more time with my family.
Right.
And I didn't want to be a hypocrite right away, right out of the chute. I'm like, what do you mean? You're dancing and in L.A. and staying in L.A. for 3 months. So she was great. Her and a cameraman who was an amazing guy, Brian, huge San Francisco fan, would travel back and forth. And I'd take a red eye right after the show at 11 o'clock and get in, go have lunch with the kids, take them to all their practices and games. And then I would rehearse. They would fly in Tuesday day, and we would rehearse them from about 8 to midnight and do it all over again.
David Ross, former Cub, former Red, former Dodger. I'm going to hit you with somebody. You probably don't know the name, but I know Greg does. You're like the Michael Beasley of baseball. Michael Beasley just signed with the New York Knicks. He's a basketball player and played at 6 different high schools and like 9 different NBA teams. So
really?
I mean, I'm trying to think, why did you move around so much?
Well, I tell everybody it was clubhouse cancer, but it was
sure.
two years I wore out my welcome, but you know what? I as a journeyman, I just couple different places, and it took me a while to find my skill set, how to be a backup, and are you a starter, are you a backup, and finally settling in that role in Atlanta. I was there for 4 years, and after starting for a little bit and kind of, you know, thinking, who am I? You know, I had a really good year in Cincinnati and then had a terrible year the next year, and I backed up Brian McCann and realized that was my home, and then started bouncing around, finding it, going to Boston after that, and then Chicago. So it actually, I think a lot of people set out to have a great career like yourself and be with one team, and or like a Chipper Jones that the first round pick, and you know, be that guy. And yeah. I look back on my career and I'm so thankful for all the different managers I played for,
well,
and teammates I ran
15
to.
15 years,
yeah. Crazy.
15 years, and it goes fast, I know. And then all of a sudden, your final year, you find yourself in the middle of what really is history,
right?
And you know, so you're with the Cubs, you're with Joe Maddon. I said they clinched the other night, and you know he's dumping the champagne on himself and everything else. Give me a little 411 on exactly what he is like as a manager and as a person.
Exactly what you see. He's very non-drama, very, you know, very chill. He would he'd text back and forth, you know, tell you, he would tell me the night before, hey, you got it tomorrow. And I'd be like, thanks. And he would always text back, groovy. You know, that's how who texts that? I don't know. But
Phil Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Probably like right out of the Phil Jackson school.
He's at home drinking wine. Very, very simple in his thoughts and his coaching methods. I tell a lot of people, and not everybody knows him, but Bobby Cox, I got a chance to play for Bobby Cox, probably the best manager I ever played for. And him and Joe Maddon are very similar in their ways. And everybody's like, really? Like Joe Maddon? I mean, Bobby Cox seems so old school and Joe Maddon seems so new school. But Joe taught the basics of baseball and the fundamentals and the simplicity of the game. And yeah, he just used some numbers and some analytics to maybe do some things differently, make some different moves, but and go outside of his box a little more. But they're very similar in their way of coaching and teaching and very lets the clubhouse run itself. Very, hey, you be you, which really opens up a lot of young guys for success. And not all the, you know, when you come in, you got to do it this way and got to do it that way. And we're gonna hit all day and we'll take extra ground balls. So my job's safe. And the front office sees me working these guys hard. And no,
there's
it's like,
no politics.
No,
there.
There's none. Right. None. And players see that. And as soon as you see, like, hey, this guy just wants what's best for everybody, and that's what the message is sent. And so everybody comes on board really fast.
Talking to David Ross on The Fan, did you get tired of that old man narrative in your last year? Because every time you came up, it was, here comes 80-year-old David Ross. How can he still walk? It's amazing. Look at him.
You know what? I didn't. You know why? Because I just wanted that pitcher to take me lightly. That way I'd throw it right down the middle. Yeah, yeah. Let me take this guy lightly. And the guy, my teammates had a blast with it. It was fun. I still get, some guy yelled at me yesterday. I got done at I did the Texas Ranger game yesterday, and some guy, I'm loading up. Some guy's like, Grandpa! Across the parking lot. It makes me laugh. You know, I'm cool with it. Whatever. You think, you know, the fact that they know my name is cool to me. People buy my jersey in Chicago, which blows my mind. I'm a career 220 hitter and backup catcher, and people love me there. So it's a really credit to my teammates and what they've said about me and the nice things of putting my name out there. So I love every second of it. I haven't had a whole lot of, you know, quote-unquote fame, but this is as big as I've ever been. And I try to take it in because I know it won't last forever.
You know, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. But before we get to that, you're here with Scotts and the MLB. They're going to launch a national grant program, Blue Ribbon Panel, to select youth baseball and softball fields for renovation, which is something that's important in your world.
So excited and so happy to be partnering with Scotts and the field refurbishment program. It's you know, when you go around now that I my son's starting to play baseball and my nephew plays, I get to go to the games, the Little League fields can be just awful. And the batter's box has got a 4-foot hole in there. And my nephew's really short. So Scotts is going around. They're doing a grant program and going to spend close to $50,000 and choosing five teams, each one getting 50 grand to refurbish their Little League field in the community. And I think it's going to grow baseball in that area. And you can get grass. You can get the batter's box. Fencing, you know, I mean, this is
the whole thing.
And when you're a little leaguer and you get to play on a grass field and it's manicured and you feel like you're in the big leagues, and that may be the only shot that you get. Some of these fields don't have fences. I was on a show earlier and they're like, I didn't even have a fence in center in outfield. Yeah. And I'm like, first home run, you had to run all the way around the bases. Yes. I'd have never hit one.
That's what it was at East Islip, too, by the way.
Not anymore.
It's not. But let me ask this question. How do people sign up for that, or how can they apply for this?
MLB.com/Scotts Fields and put in your application. We need everybody to apply. I'm going to be on a panel, gets to choose the five.
Right.
Send me the reason why your field needs refurbishment, what it needs. And I'm looking forward to looking through these and
send some pictures.
Yeah, send some pics. Send it all. We're looking for the who needs the most work. Who can use the best field?
What you're saying is tear up your field, make it look terrible, and then send some pictures, right?
Don't have like a shovel at second base in the background, you know? Like, we just dug a big hole at second.
So when you see you win the World Series and everything else, you retire, and then you watch the Cubs come out of the gate slow. And it seemed like they were just kind of going through the motions.
Missing
and,
him.
Well, they're missing you, of course. But after the All-Star break, they really kicked it into gear. Is that something that you would have expected, or were you a little shocked that they came out as slow as they did?
I didn't know. I was worried. I'd been a part of the 13 Red Sox, and 14 it did not go well, and some changes. But I think Joe did a great job of pacing him. I went to spring training. I remember going the first day of spring training thinking, my gosh, these dudes have already been hitting for weeks and months, and don't play. Like, I couldn't
feels
imagine.
Like it just ended.
Yeah,
just ended.
I couldn't imagine picking up a bat or a ball at that time. And they're getting ready for another season and a career. And so I was so happy I was done at that time. But there's a serious hangover effect. And I think it has to do with your body. I think it has to do with how much training you can do in the offseason. I think it has to do with the environment. Like, playing a regular season Wednesday game, you just got out of game 7 of the World Series, packed house, and the emotions are high for over a month, you know, from now, basically mid-September all the way through November 2nd. So you're playing the most intense environment you can possibly play in. So the fact to get your body and your mind ready, I think it may be more mental than physical, but the hangover's real, and it's hard to get locked in. And you see, not one of those guys, though the greatest thing, not one of those guys made the All-Star team, and everybody's like, I can't believe that after right. all the guys they had last year. And they all come back, and they've had the second-best record since the All-Star break. They're number one in offense in the National League.
22 over 500 since the All-Star break.
There you go. There you go.
And pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. And I think that refreshment of the All-Star break and turning your mind off and getting back to business when you get back is a credit to how Joe didn't push them early on. He talks a lot about pushing in Anaheim after they won the World Series and in Tampa Bay after they lost the World Series the next year, pushing the players, pushing them. He said that's the wrong way to do it. I'm not going to push these guys. And
he's doing the right thing. David Ross joins us for
he's got an entourage.
Minutes. Yes,
David.
He does. He has
Hey,
an
do you ever
entourage.
Think you'd have an entourage?
I don't even know. Yeah,
one,
I just got
two, three,
he's
four,
abort,
five.
I got in a Uber or a SUV out of my hotel, and I got 37. There's like three ladies, and a guy meets me at the door, and my agent. We're all just here,
look
and I'm like,
you.
All right, this is cool.
Like, say, right? Are you?
Good thing I don't have to pay any of them.
I was going to say, you know more now for Dancing with the Stars or your Cubs World Series.
Dancing with the Stars, no doubt. I'm serious. I walk through the airport, and I literally have the like 60 to 75-year-old lady market locked down. My wife gives me crap all the time. They're all hugging on me. They come in. They're like, I know you from somewhere. I'm like, hey, well, you used to play baseball. And they're like, no, that's not it. And so I never say Dance with the Stars, and they'll come up and be like, you're on Dancing with the Stars, aren't you? And they're like, oh, honey. Like, they're really aggressive.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, I can imagine why they want to get their hands on you.
Yeah, so we want to feel these love handles. You
well,
know?
You know, Greg might want to get his hands on you, too. So let me ask you this question. Were you more nervous going into Game 7 versus the Indians, which was one of the great games, truly dramatic moments and dramatic games, considering the two organizations, the Indians and the Cubs, it's Game 7, or opening night on Dancing with the Stars?
Opening night on Dancing with the Stars every day of the week. It was, that series took a couple of years off my life for sure, and Game 7, no doubt, took a couple of years off my life, but I had a lot of emotions going to Game 7, end of my career, last game I'd ever play, really wanted to win, you know, a lot. The dancing thing, I was just like, just don't fall on your face. Just do not trip.
I guess so. You actually took yourself out of your proverbial box you were talking about.
Yeah, it's you're so scared, and we went a little bit later in the show, and the anxiety builds, and you're out there, and I've been practicing for 3-4 weeks, and before that first dance, and you get out there, and you're like, I don't even remember what foot goes first. You know, do we start right foot or left foot?
That's crazy.
It's crazy, and it is the probably the most adrenaline rush when you're done and finish that. Everybody's like, you're having so much fun. I was like, I was so happy I was done and didn't fall.
Hey, let me ask you a question. I'm thinking that your phone had to blow up right after that performance hit. I'm sure all your teammates must have been watching.
They were all – they sent me a video. I still hadn't posted. I should have posted it on social media, but they sent me a video. They had that Monday off, and they were in St. Louis, and they all went to a steak dinner and had a TV. And so they videoed awesome. The whole thing, and they went crazy. They were laughing throughout it. Like, I can't believe he's doing it. And then they went nuts at the end, and big – clapping and laughing, and I was super. The coolest thing for me since I've been done is that you don't know how you're going to be perceived by your peers, right? This guy went out, he's a backup catcher, not really a big name like an A-Rod or a Jeter or somebody, and he goes out and represents Major League Baseball in a dance competition, and the feedback I've gotten from other players, ex-teammates, guys around the league has been overwhelmingly awesome. And how they watch with their wives, their son, Chris Sale's son would score me. He would sit out every week. He told me that story at the All-Star game, and I was like, the coolest thing I've ever heard. So super thankful for all the support that everybody's given me. And, I was scared. And
yeah, but the great thing is for you, David, you're a great ambassador of the sport.
Thank you.
Your teammates loved you. You had a great story around the Cubs and the World Series, and it was out there being told. And then next thing you know, you're in Dancing with the Stars. Right.
What's next? The Voice? You want to spin the chair?
That's what everybody said. I like music a lot, but there's no singing coming out of here.
I want to ask you about the Yankees before you go. No one really expected them to be this good. A lot of young players, and everybody's excited. But, I mean, this is a playoff team. This is a potential World Series team.
Oh. No doubt.
How far do you think that this group, these young players, can go in 2017?
I don't look at that group as a young group, and I know they are, but when you watch the poise and when you play in this market, the one thing I know about playing in Boston and Chicago, and especially Boston, when you play in the big market, expectations don't matter about your age. Everybody expects that team to play well and play up to the level that is Yankee baseball. Mm-hmm. And they're never intimidated because they play in one of the toughest leagues in all of baseball, and they're in this market. So intimidation's not a factor. And they play on the big TV games, and every game's intense, and the expectations. But I think they're no doubt World Series contenders, and I think they're one of the they're probably eight teams, I would say, that could win the World Series. When I sit down and think about it and look on paper, I think there's eight legitimate World Series contenders, and I think Cleveland's the best team right now. And if anybody can beat Cleveland, in my opinion, it's probably the New York Yankees in a five-game series. I don't see anybody beating Cleveland four games. I just don't see it. But if anybody can do it, it's New York Yankees. That bullpen is so deep. Their starting pitcher, Severino, is an animal. That starting pitching, if they do have a bump in the road, that could be it. But that bullpen, I mean, I feel like you could go to Greeny in the third or fourth, really, and just stretch out that bullpen.
You know, it's amazing. We were watching, going through Aroldis Chapman's year this year. It's been up and down, inconsistent. But as of late, all of a sudden, I noticed a different person on the mound. It was almost like he was going through the motions because he was coming off of the World Series hangover.
I think you're right. And it's no surprise, if you really look back, it shouldn't be a shock to anybody. The two best teams in the second half are the teams in the World Series last year.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. So they had that little bit of hangover earlier. Get some guys healthy. Get that intensity back. Get how we play as a group. Got a couple new pieces. Let's fit all that together. And then you hit your stride in the second half. And Cleveland has been obviously the best team, and the Cubs are right there. Aroldis, same thing. It's hard to get back to that intensity. You need a break. You know, you played sport. Sure. You need that offseason and your process of getting ready for a full season, especially in Major League Baseball when you play 162 or you go all the way to November 2nd. I mean, it's exhausting.
It was amazing. It was about 2 weeks ago, I think, and the Tampa Bay Rays and the Mets were playing in Citi Field because of the hurricane down there.
Right.
And I'm trying to think. I think it was Al Leiter was in the booth with Michael Kay, and they were talking about, you know, Aroldis Chapman and the problems that he was having. And then all of a sudden, in the eighth inning, he comes in, he gives up a run with a hit, and he gets out of the inning, walks a guy in the top of the ninth. And now all of a sudden, Joe Girardi gets Chasen Shreve and gets him up in the bullpen. You could see that Chapman's obviously sees this happening.
He's pissed.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, his whole demeanor changed on the mound that day, and Al pointed it out. It was unbelievable. And he has been that guy since that day, and it looks like the guy that pitched for the Cubs in the World Series now.
Well, and for me, Boomer, body language is everything.
Yes.
Body language is it just tells you, and I watched Aroldis a lot, and I did a couple Yankee games early on. And first of all, Aaron Judge is an absolute animal. I'm one of my favorite people on the planet now, like – Aroldis, I saw just a little bit of like unsure of like trying to find his stuff instead of the aggressiveness you're talking about and attacking the hitters. I'm just going to throw it middle, give you my best, and you do what you can with it. And I think that's when he's at his best rather than trying to pitch. When you don't really want to air it out, you're trying to pitch. When I catch John Lester, he would have days like, I'm gonna be your crafty lefty today rather than the power guy. Mm-hmm. And that's not when he's at his best. And I think Aroldis is the same. I saw 103, 104, I think, the other day.
He's ready to go.
And I think that whole team is, the way they've been playing, you know, I know the Boston has been keeping up, but and keeping that lead. But I think the Yankees have put that pressure on night in and night out, and not just in a 3-2 game. I mean, they're beating the crap out of some
teams. You know what? They are. They're healthy. Their lineup is fully healthy. Their bullpen is fully healthy, and all their starters are healthy. Everybody on the team right now
perfect
is
timing.
Healthy, and it's the perfect timing.
Yes. Well, Jacoby, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one more time before we let you go. If you got a field that needs some work. And you and Scotts can help. How do they do that?
MLB.com/Scotts Field. Put in your application. I want all of America to put these things in here. We want to do what's best for the areas that need it the most. And Scotts and MLB are on board, and I'm on board, and I'm super excited. It's going to grow our game and our community and our family. It's going to bring more people to baseball. I'm excited.
I can see why people like them. I can talk baseball with you.
I would love that.
Where are you going? Can't be more important than this. Where are you going?
I'll stay here all day.
Can he stay? Who can I? Who's in charge? Is it 58?
I don't know.
Who's in charge?
Listen to Boomer Esiason, morning 6 to 10 on The Fan.
I was telling Greg over here, you know, before we get into his dancing, that baseball really right now, when you think about it, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Indians, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Nationals, just those six teams alone are the most popular teams, and everybody expected, maybe not the Yankees, expected everybody else to get into the playoffs, and they're there. They're here. This is like a great year for baseball.
A great year for baseball, and the sleepers of the Diamondbacks, right? I think the Diamondbacks are sleeping, and what the Dodgers did, everybody's talking about the Cleveland run, I think they're 29-3.
It's ridiculous.
And what the Dodgers, what they went on in the middle of the year, I mean, that's unheard. I mean, it was like 50-9. I mean, just ridiculous numbers is what you're going through. And Aaron Boone said it on air last night and told, like, the parity at the top is so close. There's a big difference. Once you get to the 8th, 9th, 10th team, it's not even close. The bottom half of the league is
if you could take any one of these pitchers right now, starting pitchers, you know, Kershaw, Kluber.
Kluber's the guy. I watched him be unhittable last year and just run out of gas. You know, that last start, they only had really three strong pitchers, and they were without Carrasco, and so to watch him, what he's been doing in the seventh. I mean, you could pitch a lot. You could pick a lot. Chris Sale's been really nice to his last outing. I watched him punch out 13 in Baltimore the other day. But Corey Kluber is just, it starts on the out around the plate. He's working, he's X-ing the outside part of the plate. He's throwing that front hip two-seamer to the lefties. He's got a back foot slider. His slider's the best, the most unhittable pitch in the game. I mean, this guy is as nasty as it gets. And then their bullpen is ridiculous.
It's really good. Around here, I was going to say, Greg, around here, the Yankees, Severino basically came out of nowhere. I think they saw his stuff. They saw how good he could be. But he really finally has figured how to pitch in the major leagues now.
I'll tell you a funny story. Now I'm watching baseball a lot more on TV, and I remember, you know, when you're playing baseball, you're not really in tune with the other guys on the team. And I watched a start of his early on in the year, and I think he punched out like six or seven guys. But I watched he had that fastball slider that you know about him, but he started using his changeup, and I was like, that's a nasty pitch. When you can see it on TV. And you don't have to face it. You're like, look at the depth of that pitch. And so I'm like, this guy's an animal. Who else? He's not even being talked about as their number one early on in the year.
He's their number one now.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that guy, he may be, for me, he's coming to his own this year. When he has the mentality, and you can almost see it in his eyes, when he's got that intense mentality, it's over. It is over. When he's kind of just pitching out there, like we talked about a little bit earlier, I watch a lot of body language. And when he's focused and coming at you, He's one of the best in the game.
Talking to David Ross on The Fan, he's here on behalf of Scotts and Major League Baseball. I have to ask you about the other local in town, and not this season, but going forward, because you are someone that people still lean on after you've been out of the game with questions about on the field, off the field, front office. We were talking in the break how the front office will still lean on you. If one of the Wilpons calls you tomorrow and says, David, I want you to come and be the general manager of this baseball team to turn us around, what are you doing to make them be a contender again like they were in 2015?
I'm going to ask him to open up the checkbook.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like getting some guys healthy, obviously. I mean, you're looking at some issues there that are just, you know, I've never seen anything like what's happened to that team.
Why does it happen? I mean, is it just bad luck, or they have some sort of issue with training?
It would be irresponsible for me to comment on that, not being in that clubhouse and knowing the trainers and the medical staff there and how they train and the strength and conditioning coaches. All that stuff is being in there, I might be able to comment. But, from an outside perspective, I see them playing hard. I see, you know, I would probably get another piece in the bullpen. I think, you know, get some guys, just keep guys out of trouble, hold guys accountable. I mean, it seems like either a guy gets injured or just has some off-the-field issues that hurts the team. And I feel like you got to become more of a team atmosphere and a group of guys that are close and pull for one another. And when I saw Curtis Granderson and when they're healthy, you saw some of that. I mean, David Wright hurts. That kills you.
Well, they lost all their pitching, too. You know, they had good guys, too. They had Jay Bruce. They had Curtis Granderson.
Yeah, all
they had
great
a bunch
guys.
Of good guys on the team. It just never happened. Cespedes is in and out of the lineup.
Right.
You know, he's another big cog. But let me ask you this. When Matt Harvey was at his best –
Ooh.
To where he is right now. So a couple years ago in 2015, he's at his best. And where he is right now.
Is sad.
It is sad. Can he regain it, do you think?
And this is just my opinion, I wouldn't want to wait around and see. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't. There's a lot of chances you've given that guy. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to give up on a guy with potential like that. And it's a business. I see that side of it. But we need to put the organization ahead of everything and winning first, right? And
seems
I need
like
some accountability.
The wrong way,
no. Harvey. I actually really like him. Yeah. I've met him off the field, and he was a great guy. I just you read and see the fact of not showing up, and some of the little things that I've read and seen. And again, I'm not locked into the Mets, but just some of the off the field issues that I've seen. It just seems like he's more worried about himself and not being accountable to his teammates. And first and foremost, you need to be accountable to your teammates.
He's got thoracic outlet syndrome. He's got it comes off of Tommy John, and then he has a scapular problem. So now they put him out on the mound here the last month of the season. They want to see what he's got because you can't go anywhere else. There's nowhere else to rehab right now.
Right.
So you might as well throw him out there. And he's been doing it.
He's been all right.
He's at 95, 96, but I maybe because of the scapular injury, he can't control a slider. It looks like he's all over the place. His command of his pitches just is not right. So the question is, have you ever dealt with anybody who's ever had a scapula injury that is a pitcher that came back from that injury and regained his stuff?
I think Jake Peavy, I think his was more lat, but he had some stuff going on and some of thoracic nerve stuff. I've seen some guys come back from Wells a while back. I can't remember.
But it is.
So, yeah, it's possible. Here's the scary part if you're a Mets fan is that if you do let him go and he goes somewhere else, he's going to be on a mission.
Yeah.
He's going to be on a mission. And he's a free agent after next year?
Well, they have to tender him. They have to tender him this year.
Right. No, I knew that. But
then it's a walkout, I think, next year.
Next year, yeah. Yes, so maybe he's got the motivation of the contract year and all that here. That's why it's nice to be able to talk about it, not actually have to write the check,
exactly,
right?
Yes.
So, I would hate to make the mistake in a guy like Matt Harvey with his potential and the wipeout slider that he had. I mean, I faced him in – I mean, one of the best teams that I've played in a long time, we faced them in 15, and they went on to World Series. They were loaded.
That's when our second baseman was considered a net negative at that time. That was Daniel Murphy, who crushed you guys.
Wow. Wow. And I played against Murph a long time, and he was never that. He was like, he'll take his knock to left. And
yeah.
I'm like, I'll just stay down away, or he'll get a hit up the middle, and pitch him away, play him away. Nope.
You could not. He was in his own.
He was a monster. He climbed on the dish, and all of a sudden, his strength was always in. It was always dangerous in. From a catching perspective, and his power's in. So you always was safe, maybe throw him a bat foot breaking ball to get him to chase in there. But when he climbed on the dish and started pulling everything.
And then they let him go, which was a great move, right?
Well, hindsight, no. But, yeah. He always had the defensive issues, I think. And I after that, you never know if it's a fluke, right? Like, okay, this guy's, is he really figured it out and he's totally changed? And usually you got a better idea if you're in that clubhouse and, or a guy's just locked in for
the right
time. You watch
him the last 2 years at the Nationals. Oh, he's figured it out.
He's the best hitter. He's the best hitter, pure hitter, I would say, in the National League for me, just pure hitting. He is foot down. It's so simple, so hard to pitch to. Breaking balls, I see him, he's barreling everything, whether he hits it at somebody or not. But he's a phenomenal player, and he's made that Washington Nationals lineup
even crazier.
You can
do whatever you want now. You can. You could be in the front office. You could be a broadcaster. You could probably be a manager.
Can I just hang out with you guys?
Yeah.
You could come here every day
right,
if you'd like. Yeah.
So if what is going to be the thing when you're ready that you're going to do next with your life with all these opportunities?
Well, you hit around the head. I think when I'm ready, I my son's getting into playing flag football this year for the first time. My daughter's into volleyball and my son baseball. It's I don't know. I'm kind of. It's nice to be able to do some TV, to do some front office, to be a part of a couple different groups to figure out what my heart's passionate about and what's fun for me and what gives me the most time with my family right now. And still make a little bit of money. You know, I didn't make some of these guys money.
Yeah,
So I just it's nice to be able to have these opportunities and still be in the game of baseball in some capacity. I feel like really the luckiest man on the planet to have. A lot of people don't have these opportunities. So
plus you got a World Series ring that says Cubs on it.
How about that?
That's amazing. You know, the other thing, you will be doing ESPN's playoff stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna do. I'll be doing all the Baseball Tonight stuff from Bristol, and then we'll be at the World Series. We'll be at the Yankee game here, if the wild card game. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I'm really excited. Them and the Twins, if the Red Sox hold on for the division, I'm super pumped about that. So we'll be here for that. And I mean, it's my favorite time of year, and I'm just going to get to talk baseball. So
turn and show the camera your beautiful Scott shirt that you changed you put a lot of effort here. Yeah, you started changing, so make everybody happy. Your whole entourage.
We want to be professional when you're an ambassador for somebody. You got to get their product and their name out there.
Well, they're doing good stuff, and so are you, David. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for staying in the next segment too. That was great.
Yeah, it's tremendous. David Ross on behalf of Scott's.
Listen to Boomer Esiason, mornings 6 to 10 on The Fan.
Gino in North Carolina opening up The Fan. Gino, what's up?
Hey, what's up?
What you got, man?
Hey, how you doing, Boom?
I'm doing good, Gino. What do you got for us this morning, man? Come on.
Hey, Boom, you are the man, brother.
I got you, brother. What else you got?
You have not died.
Yeah, I know, man. It's a sad day.
Yeah.
I got two questions I want to ask you, Boom.
Okay, go ahead, Gino.
One, have you ever visited the Playboy Mansion?
I've been there.
Oh,
Number two.
Yes.
Did you spend the night?
No, I did not. I did not spend the night. I did not.
Look at those breasts.
Okay, Jerry. Jerry loves that stuff.
So tell us about your experience there, then. It's the day to do it.
It was a party for some TV show that I was doing. I was like a guest.
Okay.
And the whole cast went over.
Mm-hmm.
There was no women undressed. Everybody was dressed. Everybody was at a party.
Sure.
I left around 11 o'clock that
night. There was
two breastesses.
We had a pastor there as well.
No, there's no pastor there. No,
breast augmentation.
It was 10 o'clock. We had communion.
It's an amazing house.
Come on. Can you tell the truth?
I am.
There were no naked women at the Playboy Mansion.
There was girls in bathing suits out by the pool and everything.
Right. But
no.
Nothing. Just a breast.
Actually, I remember the producer saying to us, look, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we're going because they were celebrating the shooting of the TV show.
Yeah.
And they rented out the Playboy Mansion. It was rented out or whatever. It was like a party for the show at the Playboy Mansion.
Give it to me, baby.
This is one of those in the break. I'll hear the real story.
Yes.
Yeah. Something that's...
That is the real story.
Yeah, okay. Ric Flair claimed that he had sex with 10,000 women.
Yeah,
so Hugh Hefner, at 91 years old, being Hugh Hefner, when did Playboy start? The 50s or the 60s? Was it somewhere in there? You're telling me that he doesn't top that number? He has to. He has to. He was married to three women at once. You figure, if we do the math on this, Jerry did the math on Ric Flair.
Yes.
And said it was easily done. Hugh Hefner's got to be 50K.
I remember listening to one of his interviews, and he basically said that, you know, Playboy magazine started out as a lifestyle magazine for men.
Right.
And he says, well, you know, and you got to have some women in there, and they have to be, you know,
naked. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Didn't they just try to take the nudity out of it, and it went over so poorly that they had to put it back in?
Well, I think they're trying to rebrand it online, I think, is what's happening.
Yeah, it's a tough sell nowadays.
Like almost every other magazine and every other newspaper in America is doing the same thing.
Yeah, but it's a tough sell. I mean, the stuff you can find online.
Let's go to Jimmy in Scotch Plains. Jimmy, what's happening?
You know, Boomer.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.